Welcome to the Living a Naturally Healthy Life podcast with Delaine ND, the podcast for people looking to correct chronic illnesses such as diabetes through lifestyle change. I'm Dr. Delaine Vaughn. As a physician, I see many patients who are ill because of lifestyle decisions such as food choices. Typically, diseases such as diabetes are managed with pills or injections. This approach creates a vicious, expensive, and unhealthy cycle of medication and then more medication to address the negative side effects. As a physician and a life coach, I work with clients to resolve their diseases, get off their medications, and live a naturally healthy life. If you don't like the healthcare system in America, I recommend you use less of it by being naturally healthy. So if you feel there has to be a better, more natural way to live a healthy life, you are in the right place. Hello and welcome back to the podcast. This is podcast number 31 of the Living a Naturally Healthy Life with Delaine MD. I'm your host, Dr. Delaine Vaughn. I am a life coach, a doctor turned life coach that helps type 2 diabetics reverse their type 2 diabetes without medications, just by making lifestyle changes so that they can live a naturally healthy life. That is what I'm committed to. That is what I feel passionate about. If that's something that you feel would be helpful for you, do not hesitate to send me an email at delaine@delainemd.com, set up a consult, and figure out where we can get started for you. So, I'm recording this podcast early on a Sunday morning. Many of you may not be aware, but the room, my office, is this big, like, sunroom. It's on our second level. We live in an old house, and this used to be the sleeping loft. That is not important. What is really important is there are tons of windows in this room, and birds like to sit outside the windows and they like to chirp. So if you hear birds chirping, I'm not actually in some park recording this podcast. This is just the windows. It's just the windows in the office that I record in. Sometimes we hear a lot of animal noises. I think squirrels also sometimes can get outside of the windows on the trees that are outside our house. And you can hear them chattering. So anyway, if you hear a lot of animals, it's because it's a wonderful spring day and they're out and active and making lots of noise. So bear with me. I hope it's not too distracting. So this is podcast number 31 for me of my latest podcast series for living a naturally healthy life and helping type 2 diabetics. Today, what we're going to talk about is overeating. This is the podcast for overeaters. If you're an overeater, you are in very good company because this was my struggle. And I'd like to tell you that I've totally mastered this and that I'm an ex-overeater. It is certainly a work in progress, and it's taking me months, like probably a year or a year and a half worth of months to really work on this and get to the root issue for me and get it figured out. Not because it's so hard to get figured out. Don't despair to think that it might take you a year and a half worth of months. That really wasn't my issue. It's not that the problem of overeating is such a challenging one. It's really that I wanted it to not be an issue, so I kept acting like it wasn't an issue. And that was my path. That was my journey. That's why it took me so long. And some of these things, that's what it's about. It's not that it's so hard. It's that we try to pretend that it's not really an issue. And it certainly was an issue for me. So if this is what you're dealing with, great news. This is the podcast for you. You're in good company. And it's totally something you can get figured out. So I have a number of different types of clients that I have seen overeating in. I've seen it in the checked out eater. So the checked out eater is somebody who's like not really paying attention. They're just really absently and absent-mindedly eating. So sometimes this is the person who can finish a bag of chips and not really know how it happened. I don't even remember getting the chips. I don't even know why. Sometimes this is the person who feels like they have to clean their plate no matter what's on it. I don't care how hungry I am or I am not. This isn't really keying into hunger cues. This is an issue of how much food is on my plate. Sometimes that also happens in people who eat according to the clock. They're not really looking or paying attention to their hunger signals, but it's noon and it's time to eat, so I'm going to eat. Sometimes this is people who eat because they're compelled by the people around them. So they're social eaters, right? They eat at parties. They want to eat to make the cook feel better. I'm at my friend's dinner party. She really worked really hard to make this food and make this dinner. So I'm going to make sure that I clean my plate and eat it and maybe even take seconds so that she feels really great. All of these things are reasons that people overeat or lead to overeating, right? And then we have the emotional eaters, the people who eat because they're in a bad mood, because they're stressed, because they're anxious, because they're frustrated. And I was certainly in this category. I was the kind of person that would look to the food to alleviate my emotions. So sometimes that was anxiety. Sometimes that was frustration. Sometimes the emotion was irritation. And of course, there is no amount of Oreos that make that feeling go away, right? There's no amount of Oreos that make my anxiety less. Whatever I'm anxious about still exists if I've eaten one Oreo or three bags of Oreos. If you find that you're frustrated with your children, they're misbehaving, whatever it is, there's no amount of Ritz crackers that make that behavior different, right? If you're irritated with a coworker, there is no amount of donuts in the break room that make that episode, that event that happened that made you irritated with your coworker go away. It still exists. The other interesting thing about this emotional eating that I like to point out to my clients is that frequently when we're eating to alleviate or to appease a negative emotion, it's only the first 2 to 3 bites that actually make you feel better. The neurochemistry of this is that when you have those first 2 to 3 bites, they do, those carbohydrates, those sugars bind those receptors in your brain and they release dopamine and you feel good. But every bite after the first 2 to 3, there's no more receptors to bind. You spend the next, so you have 2 to 3 bites of a donut. You spend the next 2 to 3 donuts, entire donuts, chasing those first 2 to 3 bites, chasing that initial dopamine release that you got. But there's no more receptors to bind up. The amount of receptors are, of course, going to be different for every individual. But there is some limit to how many of those receptors you have and how many bites actually affect those receptors. Afterwards, every bite afterwards, you're just chasing those initial few bites that made you feel good, okay? Yes, you may be irritated with your coworker. Yes, you eat a few bites of donuts and you will feel better. The event that irritated you with your coworker is still there to deal with, of course, but you have some feel better. You feel better for a few brief moments, and then you're chasing with each additional bite of junk food that makes you sick. You're chasing that initial feel good that you got from those first few bites. That's something really good to know when you are an emotional eater, right? So the other category that I see overeating in is with people who used to be competitive or maybe semi-pro or pro athletes. These people, folks who used to be athletes, they're still athletes, right? Most of them still consider themselves athletes. They may not perform or compete on a professional or a semi-pro level anymore, but they still are active, right? But what they learned in their pro or semi-pro life or career was to eat based on what they perceived their physical needs were, not based on when they were hungry. So these folks really struggle to not overeat because over however many years they were competitors, they were competing on an elite level, that they stopped paying attention to their hunger signals. So these folks don't know when they're full and when they're hungry, when they should start eating and when they should stop eating. So these are the main categories I see overeating. And there are certainly, I'm sure there's 100 other reasons that people overeat. But most of the time it falls into checked out eating, emotional eating, and then this kind of less common athletic component where these people used to compete on an elite athletic level and they really struggle to determine when their body is hungry, to do what we call intuitive eating, eating when you're hungry and stopping when you're full. Okay, so what am I talking about when I'm talking about overeating? What does this look like? Because it doesn't always look like a binge eat. It doesn't always look like eating an entire chicken, right? It doesn't always look like eating an entire bag of Oreos or three. It doesn't always look like a box of donuts. Overeating can be more subtle than that. Sometimes this looks like eating foods that don't really serve your body. So eating what I call garbage, right? Junk or garbage. Carb foods that are garbage, right? Some carbs are going to be good for your body. Carrots and cucumbers and veggies and berries. All of those are going to be healthy for your body and serve your body. And then there are carbs that don't. Your breads, your pastas, your crackers, your cookies, your chips, your
candies, your sodas, your cake, your ice cream, right? That's garbage. That's junk. So overeating certainly happens when you eat those foods, right? Partly because, again, you're chasing that big dopamine hit every additional bite after the second or third bite. And two, you get in this pattern of providing dopamine to your brain with carbohydrates and sugars. So overeating is very easy with these foods. The other thing to remember about these types of foods, this junk food, this garbage, is that they are made in a way to make them dissolve very quickly, right? So if you think about a Ritz cracker, they're buttery, they're flaky, you eat them, they mix with the saliva and the moisture in your mouth, and they dissolve, right? You swallow that into your stomach, and there is very little bulk to that food to cause your belly to feel full, right? Your belly will send messages to your brain that it is full when there is stretch and tension on the stomach wall. These types of food, this garbage food, ice cream, cake, sodas, crackers, chips, are made in a way that they do not give that tension, that stretch on your stomach wall, so that your brain never receives the message from the stomach, because the stomach never sends the message that it's got food in it. So it's very, very, very easy to overeat on these foods. Very easy. You have to eat a lot of them to get that stretch in your stomach. And that means you consume a ton of calories. And not that calories have everything to do with it, right? But you consume a ton of energy, a ton of sugar, a ton of fat, a ton of carbohydrates before your brain registers that you've gotten anything in your stomach. So this is part of what I see with overeating. Sometimes overeating looks like eating foods that do serve your body. They are on plan food. So it's a second helping of chicken. It's some extra nuts. It's extra cheese. It's extra veggies. And this typically I see when people are eating for emotional reasons, or they are eating for the reason, like they're the athlete that can't really know how to perceive or interpret the signals coming from their bodies. So they just keep eating a little bit more until they get to way past full and they didn't realize it. Sometimes overeating looks like nibbles and bites before a meal, maybe as you're cooking. An extra piece of cheese or an extra piece of meat while you're preparing your meal. Or this was something I used to do that was really funny. I would eat nuts while I was cooking dinner. And I was completely convinced this is just like an appetizer. This is like part of it. This is an appetizer. If I were at a restaurant, this would be what I would eat. I used to tell myself that I could do this because I was cooking. Maybe I was annoyed with work, or maybe I was annoyed with kids running around the house and being wild after school. But I told myself that this was okay because I was already going to eat, right? It was right before a meal. And so my insulin was already going to spike up. So eating the nuts ahead of time, it was fine, quote unquote. I told myself it was fine. But here is why this was a problem for me. So not only did I tell myself that eating was fine because it was an appetizer, but I also felt entitled to eat all of my dinner because it was on plan, right? So what I was found that was after my appetizer, I was really too full to finish my dinner, but I did it because I had planned it and I deserved it, right? So of course this led me to overeat, and this caused me to hold on to extra pounds. It also promoted and propagated my primitive brain to dictate the decisions that I made around what I was going to eat. In turn, this kept me from reaching my goals. And because I fought to keep this rationalization, this is probably a whole entire other podcast, right? This rationalizing what we do. I did this behavior for many, many months. I did this for quite some time. And I thought I deserved it, so it was okay. And here's the kicker. That whole deserving, that whole entitling, you know, I'm entitled to do it, I deserve to do it, that feels really real. That feels almost like self-care. But really what you can extrapolate that to is I deserve to hold on to those extra pounds. I deserve to not reach my goals. I'm entitled to not live the healthier, natural version of myself. I'm entitled to not learn to control what I eat. That's really what those rationalizing thoughts lead to and get you. We call it something else, but it's not. It's you're entitled to continue to eat this way and not reach your goals is really what it is. So when you start to feel that, I want you to recognize that as a red flag, because it's really a feeling, it's a thought that really does not get you to your goals. So see that for what it was. And again, sometimes overeating is just straight emotional eating. You're eating your lunch at work because you're irritated, right? You may be eating your planned meal. You may even only be eating the amount that you plan to eat, but you're eating it because you're irritated with a coworker or a situation at work. It's not eating because you're hungry. It's eating because you want to deal with your thoughts and feelings instead of eating because you're triggered by your stomach that you're hungry, right? And what does that do? Again, that gets you in this pattern behavior that you're going to meet unpleasant feelings with food. And that pattern's really where we get into trouble. Sometimes most easily recognized, you have rage eating where you're very angry about something and you turn to food to manage that anger. But all of these are examples of overeating, right? However, whenever you are eating for another reason other than hunger, right? You're eating for some other reason than true stomach hunger. This is overeating. So let's talk briefly about what I mean by true hunger versus brain hunger, right? So true hunger is true body hunger or stomach hunger versus brain hunger. That's hunger that comes from your brain. So true hunger is something that starts in your stomach, right? It is a feeling, a sensation. We should really call these sensations. And I realize that these are kind of semantics and we're splitting hairs. But when it comes down to it, it makes a lot of sense. And you need to be able to distinguish between brain hunger and true hunger. So true hunger is a sensation that starts in your stomach. It travels up your nervous system, up your spinal cord, to your brain, where your brain interprets it as, hey, it's time to eat. This is like when you set your hand on a stove that's hot. You have receptors in your hand that recognize the heat, the intense heat. Those receptors connect to nerves that then travel the pathway of nerves up to your brain, where your brain perceives it as your hand is on something hot, and it sends a message down to the muscles to remove the hand so it doesn't get damaged by the heat on the stove, okay? True hunger is the same. It originates in the body. It travels the nervous system to the brain. The brain perceives it as hunger and tells you that, okay, it's time to eat. So brain hunger is something totally different. Brain hunger happens in the brain, right? It comes from a thought. I'm annoyed with this situation. That then travels and we sense that, we tell ourselves, we have developed a pattern of dealing with that unpleasant thought with food. And that pattern gets played out over and over and over. It is a well-played pattern in your brain that tells you you should eat something. And typically when it does this, it's telling you you should eat something specific, right? So maybe it's chocolate. I feel hungry. I need to eat chocolate. Chocolate is the only thing that will fix this hunger. I'm hangry, right? Those Snickers commercials, I'm hangry. I really need a Snickers. If you're telling yourself you really need a Snickers, that is probably very unlikely to be true hunger that came from your stomach, right? Ethiopian kids who are raised or in areas of the world that are famished, that are dealing with famine, that are truly experiencing negative impacts on their body due to lack of nutrients, those people are happy to have anything, broccoli, chicken, eggs, everything that's healthy. They're going to be thrilled with that food because they're truly hungry in their belly versus hunger that comes from their brain that can only be satisfied with Ritz crackers, potato chips, Snickers. Even sometimes we do this innocently with food that like seems healthy for us, right? So sometimes I've done this with nuts. More nuts because I'm really irritated and I want that crunch. I want that salt. That sometimes can be it. So if you're telling yourself peanuts are the only way that you can deal with the quote unquote hunger you're experiencing, you should probably recognize that's not real hunger because broccoli or chicken or eggs or all sorts of other healthy things will also deal with real hunger versus brain hunger. So the other thing about brain hunger, so another example, people are like, but no, how do I tell the difference? This is really something I seem to feel in my body. And that, I get it. That's real, right? But recognize when you are nervous about something, say you have to give a big speech and you're going up on stage and you have to give a presentation and you will feel feelings in your stomach like butterflies in your stomach. That is real, right? But there aren't really butterflies in your stomach. That is all coming from a thought in your brain that may sound like, oh my gosh, what if I trip going into the stage? Oh my gosh, what if I forget what I'm going to say? Those are the thoughts that are causing a very real feeling in your body, but it is not because something is going on in your body. And this is what I'm talking about with brain hunger too, right? There are thoughts going on in your brain that you perceive in your body. It is not real. There's not really a hunger going on in your body. One of the main ways that we can determine whether it's true hunger or whether it's brain hunger is to see, am I hungry for something very specific? Because if I am, that's likely brain hunger. Am I having a very quick onset of hunger? Because body hunger, stomach hunger, true hunger does not come on that way. It comes on in waves. So those are a couple different ways that you can kind of try to determine what is true hunger versus what's brain hunger. So when we get into the overeat, when we are on donut number 3, when we're on the last column of Oreos in the first Oreo bag, when we're on the third roll of Ritz crackers or at the end of a brand new family size bag of Lay's, what's going on in our brain? So our brain then shifts into a different mentality. And this is really more of a binging issue, right? So yes, there are innocent overeats. They're innocent, quote unquote. They are overeats where you're just consuming more calories than you needed. But a lot of times what happens is once we feel that sensation of too full and we know we got it wrong, then we flip into this mentality of, I've already screwed it up. I might as well eat everything that I typically wouldn't eat, right? I've already screwed it up. It's already a screwed day. Let's just cash this day out and we'll start again tomorrow, right? So then all of these feelings flood up of fear of missing out maybe or deprivation. So let's talk about that, because then, of course, this mentality of I've already kind of screwed it up leads to worsening of the situation entirely. So many times I would find that I had already overate and then I had this thought in my head, well, there's so many foods that I wouldn't let myself eat anyway, and I may never get to eat them again, as if that was a reality. So I should eat everything that I wouldn't typically. And, you know, just try it. I don't need to eat the whole Snickers bar, just a bite, right? So I would end up allowing myself or eating foods that I wouldn't usually eat. And then I would eat a little bit of everything because there was this element of fear. So of course, like so many other negative emotions, this fear, which is a negative emotion, never leads to anything that serves the human, right? That serves our greater goals. So fear usually causes the human being, in a very primitive sense, to run and hide, or some other form of running and hiding. For me, it was, don't really pay attention to what you're doing. This is what I would tell myself. Don't really pay attention about what you're doing. Don't think about it. Don't try to evaluate it. Just do it blindly. That was my version of running and hiding. Because I was afraid if I applied my rational prefrontal cortex to the situation, I might not allow myself to eat this food that didn't really serve my body or my goals, because I may never get it again, right? And that may never get it again was really the fear of missing out. And it was totally irrational. So it's like when your kids will do something and they don't really ask permission because they were afraid you were going to say no. So that's exactly how I would handle it. It's funny how we completely discourage this behavior or character flaw in our kids. But here we are, grown people, still struggling with these same things, right? We don't want somebody to tell us no. When you apply your prefrontal cortex to the scenario, you realize that you could have this food anytime. You could put it on plan anytime you want. You can plan for all of it. You can plan for an entire, you could plan for 5 Snickers. You can plan to totally get stuffed on M&Ms. You can plan cake, ice cream, pizza, chips, whatever you wanted to. There is never a real risk that you're never going to get that food again because you could always plan for it. But that's not really what you want in the moment. In the moment, your primitive brain is really flared and it just wants what it wants and it wants it regardless, right? It's like the child who wants what they want. They don't want to wait till Christmas or their birthday for that toy in the store. They want it and they want it right now. This is the way my primitive brain behaves. When you allow that primitive brain to get what they ask for in this pitching fit mode, it's just like the child, right? If your child is walking through a store and sees a toy and you say, no, your birthday's coming up, we'll get it then maybe then. and they pitch a huge fit for it, and you give in and give them that toy, you have just encouraged and taught that child to pitch a fit for the toy. Whenever your primitive brain is making this huge fit in your head and giving you all these reasons about why you need to eat that Snickers bar right this minute, and then you eat that Snickers bar in that moment, you have just taught your primitive brain that those tactics work to get you to eat the Snickers bar. Okay? And that's where it really works against you. The more that we let our primitive brain make those decisions, the more ingrained that neural connection in our brain gets, that that's how we're going to deal with the scenario. Every time I have a fear that I'm going to miss out, this is what I'm going to do. And that makes it just harder to break that behavioral pattern. And again, all of this is fear, is driven from this fear that we might miss out on something that is available every day at your local gas station for the most part, right? You can have this any day and you can put it on plan and do it responsibly in a way that serves your health goals. But we get this fear in our head because that fear in your head drives this behavior that is very well known for you and very well patterned for you. And that's your primitive brain pitching a fit. That's the child in the store that knows if I pitch a fit for this toy, I will get the toy. Okay, so for things that are not available, I want to mention, recognize that this is your primitive brain being sneaky. Almost everything is available to us at some other time, right? So we'll tell ourselves, well, we're at this restaurant and it's the only time it's been on the menu. I'm never going to come back to this restaurant before. No, that's probably not true. The restaurant's literally across town. If you want that dessert, but you're like, oh, I'm never going to come back here, that's fine. You can call that restaurant and I will guarantee if you offer to give them money for that dessert, they will make it for you to go. And you can pick it up and bring it home on another day when you've put it on your plan. Don't let that story that your brain will tell you be the reason that you go off plan or the reason that you start down this pathway of overeating something that doesn't serve your body, right? Also recognize that even if you're somewhere like special, you're on vacation and you are at a store and they are selling fudge and you've got to eat it. Or they have ice cream that's special and homemade. That's better, right? Because the ice cream that's special and homemade might melt in the car. I will guarantee you, one, if you called them, they would put that ice cream on dry ice and ship it to you. Two, if you asked them, they would put that ice cream in a pint and give it to you with some dry ice so that you could bring it home. All of that is a possibility for you, right? You could always come back tomorrow and get it, unless you're leaving today, right? And then you can, again, put it on dry ice, get it back to your hotel. You could put it in the freezer, and then you could have it the next day on plan. The other thing I want to offer whenever people are like this, because we really want to believe this, because we really want to believe we have to take advantage of every food opportunity that comes our way. What I want to offer to you is there are tons of foods all over the world that you don't even know about that is amazing. You don't even know it exists. And your life is no less full today not knowing that food exists and not being able to eat it, right? You still have this fabulous, wonderful life, even though there's food all over the world that you can't experience. Not experiencing that one food that would, one, not serve your health, and two, possibly tip you off into this off-plan overeating program in your brain, pattern in your brain. There's no reason to do that. Your life is just as full without that one food, right? And coming to a point where you can realize that your life is just as full without any food really is that freedom from food that we're all looking for. So the other feeling that we get when we're in the middle of this like process in our brain of overeating is deprived, right? So this is similar to feeling the fear of missing out, but recognize it's more pervasive because most of us have spent time on diets which have been restrictive. And of course, the definition of deprivation is to suffer a severe and damaging lack of something, right? To deny possession or use of something. So when we restrict our foods, our diets, and our food choices, we perceive it as suffering. So of course, it's very difficult to do something for a long term, a lifestyle change when we consider it suffering. The other thing that's really interesting and funny is that we think that we're suffering without M&Ms. I'm suffering without the food that actually poisons my body and makes me sick. So if you don't get your diabetes and your health under control, you're going to suffer the negative consequences of that, right? That looks like you know, amputations and foot sores and foot ulcers and sticking your finger and doing insulin injections and possibly blindness and possibly ending up on dialysis. That's suffering. But we tell ourselves that going without cake is suffering. So we really have to question how we're looking at this. I like to use the term restraining my food choices versus depriving myself or limiting, because the definition of restraining is to keep something within limits. So it's unemotional, dispassionate, or moderate behaviors of self-control. That's restraint. And that's really what I want to show. That's really what I want to have. I want to have things that keep myself within the limits that keep me healthy and that I don't have to be emotional about or suffer through, but have some self-control, right? That seems less emotive to me than depriving myself. So again, the bigger question here is, why are we phrasing it as suffering or deprivation? We're providing our bodies healthy foods that serve our biological needs, and that's nothing to suffer. So when you get into that mindset that you're depriving yourself and that's going to lead you to an overeat, recognize that that's really not what's going on. You are serving your body, you're serving your health, and that's really how you want to do it. So let's talk briefly about how we feel after the overeat, because initially there will be a dopamine high, right? You're going to feel good because of the food you ate. But after the food settles and our bellies are overfull, for the most part, we feel uncomfortable. We feel physically ill, and we feel at kindest disappointed in ourselves. At worst, we feel pretty disgusted with ourselves. When we go to get on the scale, there's fear, there's anxiety. When we go to check our blood sugar, we're anxious, we're nervous. And we have all of these negative emotions that come up. So I want you to see how interesting it is. We have this fear of missing out. We feel entitled. We feel deprived. We have all of these negative emotions that lead us to eat these foods that don't serve ourselves. And then we eat the foods to try to avoid or to try to get rid of those negative emotions. And then we feel bad because we ate the food. It's almost like you really can't win. So why are we making the choice repeatedly to eat the foods that don't serve us, right? Why do we not make the choice to follow the food, eat the food that's on our plan? Why do we behave this way? So I want to offer the reason that we behave this way is because we've made a pattern of behaving this way. And what you need to do to change it is to break that pattern, to through awareness, through being conscious of what's going on and not checking out and not running and hiding, be aware that, oh, this is what's going on. Of course, this is what I'm going to do. This is what I've done for all these years. Today, I'm going to try it differently. So I want you to try that out and see how that goes. I know this is a really long podcast. I'm so sorry. It's been very, very long. But recognize that we have these overeating patterns and that they propagate overeating, and then that we feel bad, right? We try to avoid the bad feelings. We do this overeating. That overeating causes more overeating, and then we feel bad about the overeating. You're going to feel bad no matter what. Maybe this week we try it a different way. So that's my challenge to you. Any questions, holler at me. I'm happy to answer anything. And certainly life coaching makes this all easier. So if that is something you're interested in, send me a message to Delaine@DelaineMD.com and we'll set up time to get you a consult so you can start on your path to living your naturally healthy life. I hope you have a good week. Talk to you soon. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening. If you've enjoyed today's episode, please subscribe and share with your friends and family. Also, leave me a review. If you want to resolve your diabetes naturally without any pills or injections, I can help you. Visit DelaineMD.com for more information. Click on the Work With Me tab, send me a message, and we can set up a mini coaching session. You guys have a great week. I'll talk to you soon.